This is episode 432, dated Friday, October 3rd, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to In Perspective. I am Bob Branco. Great to be with all of you today. This is episode 432, dated Friday, October 3rd, 2025. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how you doing? Peter, how you doing?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Peter.
Yeah,
how
okay.
You doing?
Weird. We're doing fine. Coos Bay is fine. It's sunny. It's kind of chilly. We're waiting for the rains to start, but they haven't started yet.
We are cool, fall-like, 65 to 70, bright sunny skies. Summer is going to make a return appearance within the next few days. Before we continue, allow me to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. Let's thank Raymond Gay, our editor and producer, our media outlets, and Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, who archives our shows on our website. To find them, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts, click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest. And as Peter would say,
merci, Jackie. Yeah.
There you are. Okay, so allow me to also say hi to Trish, who's our facilitator for today's program, along with Herbie, who's our streamer. And because we are being streamed live, let me give out my email address for those people who would like to comment on our programs. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. I want to say hi to a listener, Rick Troiano. Thank you very much for your opinions about our program. We appreciate them. We have back with us on our show former New York Congressman John LaBoutelier, a major feature on our show. He's with us a lot, and we really appreciate his willingness to be on our program when he can be. Welcome to the program again, Congressman.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Peter. I love doing the show, as you know, and I'm honored every time you ask. And thank you. And I hope we're going to have our buddy John Gizzi on. He's supposed to check in here.
He agreed to be with us today. I did get an acknowledgement from him, so it's just a matter of time, hopefully, before he comes on.
Good.
I would like to open up by asking a very important question that I'm sure millions and millions of people would like to hear a great answer to. Why would anybody want our government? Why would anybody want our government to shut down?
It's a great question. I don't know myself why they do, but both parties have elements of it that want to shut it down. They think it exacts from the other side a concession or prevents something else from happening. And these things follow a pattern. They can go for a few days to several weeks, and then they end, and everybody who works for the government that was laid off or works like the TSA workers, and they have to keep working during the government shutdown, and they get their money retroactively. That's going to happen again this time, but there's going to be a lot of pain associated with it and no gain. And in the end, it's a pox on both parties, both political parties. Neither one wins. They both end up losing.
But I'm just saying, look what it costs. That's the whole thing. In the meantime,
yeah,
it costs a lot.
Yeah. Well, costs a lot financially, first of all. But these people who work for the TSA or the FAA or whoever, they're not making a lot of money. They have to work and barely scrape by. And now they got to keep working without that income. And they miss a couple of paychecks. We know from previous shutdowns that what they do is they stop showing up for work and go drive for Uber or some other part-time job to get some money coming in. And then our services that we are paying for like safe air travel or, you know, quick lines at the airport, whatever it is, those things get clogged up, slowed down, inconvenience to us, services denied. It will grow over time and be more and more unpleasant.
I was saying to John Gizzi, when we were talking a few days ago, that I thought I would never say this, but I really wonder what the Democrats are thinking. I think they have an issue that's worth talking about, this whole issue of health care increases in health care costs and how that's going to impact on people. But to shut the government down because they think the Republicans are going to fold and say, oh, uncle, we'll make this happen. It's not going to happen. And President Trump would not sign a bill that did this anyway. So it seems like a futile effort. What I'm curious, though, is what are your thoughts about why the issue that Democrats are using to shut the government down?
Well, first of all, man, that term that they're shutting the government down.
Right.
Yeah, you could say they are, but they're really not. They're just not providing 7 votes in the Senate to get it up to 60 to overcome a filibuster to pass the continuing resolution that the House passed that just keeps the government open at the current spending limits without anything else being done. The reason the Democrats are upset is Obamacare tax credits that lower your premium or keep your premiums low for millions of Obamacare people are expiring later this year. And they have asked Trump and the Republican leadership, we got to extend these tax credits to keep these people's premiums down. And so far, neither Trump nor the Republicans have agreed to do that. And that's been linked up to reopening the government. I think they're going to end up buckling on it, and they will do it. Because I think that this thing is going to end up hurting Republicans more than the Republican leadership realizes. And the polling shows by almost a 2-to-1 margin, people blame Trump and the Republicans. And why wouldn't they? Trump runs the White House, the House, the Senate, and in the eyes of the public, the Supreme Court. He's got full power. So if the government's closed, how can he say, well, the Democrats closed it? He closed it. He's running it. He's Mr. All-Powerful. Even though technically the Democrats have not provided 7 senators to vote to keep the government open. So you want to blame them? I don't know.
This afternoon, I heard part of a briefing with Caroline Levin. I think that's her name, the press secretary.
Levitt.
And she's calling it the Democratic shutdown. She's saying the Democrats shut the government down.
Yeah, of course. Well, but this happens every time. They throw blame at each other, and that's to be expected. And by the way, on this blame thing, if you're a Democrat, you're going to blame Trump and the Republicans. If you're a Republican or a MAGA person, you're going to blame the Democrats. It's always this way. It's the group in the middle. It's the independents, the middle group who aren't in either party. So far, a heavy majority of them in the few polls that have been done, they're blaming Trump and the Republicans more than they're blaming the Democrats, because of what I said. They're in power.
You were saying that, Trump controls the House, the Senate, and maybe even the Supreme Court.
Yep.
And he knows that the Democrats don't have as much influence as they once did. So why would him or any other Republican try to get away with blaming the Democrats who are not the majority?
Well, I don't know. I don't understand that either. Yeah. But he thinks the public is so stupid and the MAGA people are so dumb that he says today is Tuesday when it's Friday, that they're going to believe it. And he says they did it, so it's their fault. And some people buy that. Let's face it. Hardcore MAGA people believe anything Trump tells them. They just regurgitate whatever he says.
May I say with respect.
There you are. Welcome.
Right.
To my right.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
How are you?
I couldn't be better now that I'm with you all, and especially my friend of 40-plus years, John LaGuglia.
45 years.
45 to be exact. I would point out that, first of all, there are polls that show just the opposite, and I went to a briefing on the polling of who's responsible. And of course, you were through this in 1981, John, with Reagan, with a few days of a shutdown. I remember 1995 when Bill Clinton, according to the then House Republican Majority Leader, Tom DeLay, was about to acquiesce on a slimmed down budget. But Bob Dole and the Senate side said, we've got to get people back to work. And Clinton emerged as the winner in that fight. It all depends on different times and different circumstances. I can say this, that Republicans are saying they voted for the House measure on the continuing resolution unanimously when it came up for a vote, two times, in fact. And that included the cutting of health care benefits for illegal aliens, people in the U.S. who are not there. No Democrat voted for the measure in the Senate, and as you said, the seven votes were not there to break the filibuster. But Republicans are saying, we voted for the House measure, for the continuing resolution passed in the House that would keep the government open. And the survey I saw at a briefing, 37% blame Democrats in Congress, 27% blame Republicans in Congress or the White House, and 8% blame the Republicans in Congress. In other words, it's about an even split with the country.
Well, I guess those numbers don't add up to 100%.
No, they don't.
27, 37, and 8. Oh, okay.
Right.
Well, but the question isn't, the polls I've seen, those numbers are right, but they got another line. Trump. So when you, how many people blame Trump? More people blame him than either party. So they blame him, or they blame the Republicans, or they blame the Democrats. So if you add the if you add Trump's number and the Republican number, it's heavily over 50% blame them combined.
Okay. And in the poll you saw.
It's the Washington Post poll just came out. Yeah. It was, you know. But look, polls are polls. It doesn't matter.
No, I only believed in two polls in my life, Lech Walesa and John Paul.
So, John, Gizzy, could you help me with something? Because so the Republicans are arguing that the Democrats want to provide free health care to folks here illegally. It is my understanding that this has never been the case, that some states might do that for whatever reason, but the federal government's healthcare things do not provide free healthcare to illegal aliens. Can you explain to me what they're referring to when they say things like that?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, let me bring you back to nearly 15 years when Barack Obama was president. And they were passing the legislation to put the Affordable Care Act into effect. And he said before Congress, and I think this is where you get this impression, that there are those who say people who are not American citizens will get health care. And this is not true. And that prompted Congressman Joe Wilson of South Carolina to famously say,
"You lie."
Right. Wilson is a gentleman. He called the president the next day to apologize, but he explained to me in an interview after that Republicans in the House were trying to put specific bans on people who were not citizens receiving health care. And each time they would introduce the measure, the Democrats who controlled the committee system then stripped them out. This was in 2010. Now, in some cases, as you say, it's left up to the states, but there are no bans at the federal level on non-citizens receiving health care. And some states have banned it on their own. Many others have permitted it, notably California. And I would simply say that the measure that passed the House that Republicans voted for did contain the specific ban on health care for non-citizens, and it was stopped by the Democrats. I'm sure there were many other reasons, but this was a fact.
I believe what the situation about that is federal law mandates that in an emergency, meaning someone taken to an emergency room for an emergency, has to be treated, whether they're a citizen or not, whether they have insurance or not.
The word exactly, John, is non-emergency health care.
Right. Okay. But in an, well, it's fine. So an illegal alien in a emergency is getting covered and not covered. They're getting treated. And we, the American taxpayers, are going to have to pay for it. That's the way it is. That doesn't mean if you have a sore throat and you walk in to a doctor, that's getting covered. It's not. That's not an emergency. And by the way, that's the humane policy, obviously. And it's federal law that they have to treat people in an emergency. Now, I saw a thing in the New York Post. California spends $6 billion a year on health care for illegals. That's California. If they choose to do it, if the taxpayers want to do it and elect a government that wants to do it, that's their business. But on the federal level, which we're talking about, a federal shutdown, this shutdown is not over this issue. It is not over illegal aliens getting health care. That's Trump with the message, because they polled this. They know that it ticks people off, the idea of, pay my money to have this guy who's covered dead. But that's not happening. It's not the issue. The other issue is the issue, which is all these people who are on Obamacare, who have subsidized premiums, that expires in a couple of months. And if it isn't extended, bang, their premiums are going up like 24% or some number like that. And I think this is the Trump way of gutting Obamacare without doing it overtly.
Got Gizzy?
Yeah. I would respectfully say to my friend John Leboutelier that if you were to the law, you are correct. It says that non-emergency aid, or the measure in the House was to say, is for American citizens only. And it doesn't cut off emergency aid, but that is something that Republicans tried to enact in amending the Affordable Care Act in 2010, and they were stopped by the majority in the House. Now they have included what they were thwarted from doing 15 years ago. And that would be a change, you know, in the law. But you are correct. It doesn't say stop emergency aid. It says stop non-emergency aid. And that was the point that in the speeches in the House in favor of the measure that passed and that the Senate took up, that was emphasized and drawn out pretty carefully. So I would say, yes, California spends that amount of money. Other states do. And the federal government is not banned from providing non-emergency aid to those who are not citizens as of today.
But they don't right now, correct? In other words, okay, they're allowed to. My understanding is
they are allowed to.
What's that?
They are allowed to give aid to, you know, someone who is a non-citizen at this point, be it emergency or non-emergency. But just
They have the option to do that, but it is my understanding that they're not doing it.
Well,
I understand what you're saying. I find this whole thing to be really confusing.
Well, that's the whole point. But by the way, Peter, I'm probably the oldest chronologically person on this call. I'm 72. I'm obviously Medicare. I'm on Medicare. And, this week Trump out of his own mouth said that these illegals were getting the Cadillac program of Medicare being given to them. And that's not true. Medicare is not treating illegal aliens. Medicaid might be. And the Medicaid Right. Medicaid is run by both the feds and the each state. They're a right. partner on the thing. And state, if a state, partnership. Correct. If they choose to do this for lower income people, which most illegals are in the lower income brackets, usually, if the state wants to do it, that's their business. But his exaggeration discredits his argument to say that what I'm on, Medicare, which is a very good program, to say that that's being used on illegal us, it's not true.
Mm-hmm. But Medicaid, and John, you bring up a painful subject with me. At White House briefings during the Affordable Care Act debate, I many times asked questions about Medicaid, and it came out Medicare, and Robert yep. Gibbs, press yep. secretary, loved to correct me on television and in front of everyone, and I would say, I'm sorry, Medicaid. And a lot of people make that mistake. Trump, when it comes from a president, it's a little different from a reporter right. asking a question.
But right, but the term Cadillac program, because there's a part oh, yeah. of Medicare, which is the super good Medicare. That's the best one. There's no Cadillac Medicaid. It's no. Medicare. Trump, I don't know what he knows. He says this stuff all the time. He screws them up. But the words of a president do count.
Yeah.
And especially right now when his party, I've never seen a party in lockstep with their president like this one is. So we in the Reagan coalition were never as locked in with Reagan as this crowd is. These guys are real robots. And so when the president says, oh yeah, illegals are getting the Cadillac part of Medicare, they repeat it. And, you know, what, 35% of Americans probably believe it.
Yeah. This is helpful. I want to go into another topic before we throw it up for questions. There's been a lot of talk about Charlie Kirk's murder. And
yes.
I find the whole Charlie Kirk thing really interesting. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to him. You know, occasionally I'll hear quotes of his that strike me as incendiary and racist and sexist and yeah. Misogynistic. And, but apparently there's another side to him, or there's something where he's not that way or something. And one other reaction, his assassination is causing a lot of, more folks to become Christians, as it were, to be baptized, especially men, which I find fascinating. And so I'm curious how both of you think about all of this.
Biz, you want to go first?
Yes, John. After Charlie Kirk died, I was trying to think of the right words to say about him, and I liken him to someone John and I both knew, William F. Buckley, Jr., in the sense that Buckley admonished reporters for his National Review magazine and other audiences not to mock or belittle or dismiss their opposite numbers in politics. He treated the left with respect, although he disagreed with them. John certainly remembers that he featured on his program John Kenneth Galbraith and Norman Mailer, who he considered a personal friend. And even using the term pro-abortion, he admonished people, say pro-choice, because they respect their viewpoint, even if you disagree. Charlie Kirk was that way in audiences at campuses around the country. He had a sign in back of him, "Prove me wrong." And any of his positions, he would invite people to challenge him on it, and he would have a respectful disagreement, not unlike William Buckley on firing line for so long. And that's how I perceived him. Now, I'm sure with somebody who spoke as much as he did, wrote as much as he did, you're going to find a time when he digressed from that, or maybe said something that was inappropriate. But overall, his idea was you won converts by making a case and listening to their argument. And I think that's what he will be remembered for. John may disagree with this.
Well, I do agree. I never paid much attention to Charlie Kirk. But from afar, I would see these turning point, conferences, quite often, usually more in the South and Southwest, it seemed like to me, and featuring a lot of young people. And, you know, Peter asked about an influx of young men, getting baptized since the assassination. And that points us to a crisis in America, which is the crisis of young men. And what is the crisis? The crisis is more and more young men feel alienated, are lonely, are loners, are spending an inordinate amount of time on video games and online instead of out socializing and making friends. And by the way, having trouble getting dates and all sorts of stuff that it takes away from the quality of their life, you know. And if joining a church, if getting baptized is a way to get them back into the social world, that's great. Because it's at a time when religion is going down in America. Churches are closing and fewer people are members of the church. Fewer people believe in God than years ago. It's a bit of a religious crisis in this country. So if that changes, that's good.
John, mm-hmm. Is it just the young men?
More young men, yeah, than women.
I wonder why.
Well, it's because it's a reaction to, 50 years of feminism. And let's face it, there's been like a pendulum swing towards women in America to make up for centuries of anti-women treatment. I mean, you watch shows like The Gilded Age, Downton Abbey, stuff from 100-plus years ago, and it's frightening to see the way women were treated. I mean, it's just, obviously they couldn't vote, number one. But when a man divorced a woman, this is up to 100-plus years ago in this country, man says to his wife, I want to divorce you. I have a lover. I want to divorce you. She has no choice in the matter. He divorces her. He goes off with his lover. He can get remarried. She's ruined. She is a social outcast for being a divorced woman. That's the double standard that existed. Now, that's gone in this country, thank God. Now more women attend college than men. That's a huge change. When I went 50 years ago, it was about 65% men to 35% women. It's now over 50% of college attendees are women.
John Labutle, you and I both went to Ivy League colleges around the same time. And when I went to my Ivy League college, women had been accepted something like 8 years earlier, than when I showed up.
Yeah.
It really, and so the result of that was that, proportion between men and women on the campus was something like 2.5 to 1, 2.5 men to 1 woman. And it's obviously different now, but it, in my lifetime, in our lifetimes, things were, when we were teenagers, it was a different world.
Yep. But to answer you, Bob, that's a brief history of how things have changed. And a lot of men feel they are at the short end of the stick now, the way women forever felt they were at the short end of the stick.
You know, you touch a poignant nerve in me, gentlemen. Up until the 1970s, married women could not get their own credit cards.
Yes.
It was all in their husband's name. And I know that a colleague of John's in the House, Congresswoman Margaret Heckler of Massachusetts, sponsored the legislation at a national level that ended that practice and permitted women to have credit cards and build up credit on their own. And the reason I know this is that states were doing it at the same time. My late wife, Colleen, was a Republican state legislator in Michigan when Democrats controlled the House, but it was her legislation that did the same for women with credit cards at the state level.
That's interesting.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So it's a big change that's gone on.
And this would have been in 1975 to 76, I believe.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that too. And so getting back to the whole religious thing, you know, it used to be, as I remember in the 90s and maybe 2000s, that mostly women were going to church, you know, and if not leading the church, because some churches didn't allow women to lead, which is a whole nother conversation. And men sort of went or didn't go, and sort of, and the whole issue was, okay, how do we, get men involved? And now we're seeing the exact reverse, that men are flocking to be baptized, and women, as far as I can see, are running in the opposite direction.
Well, okay, now that raises an associated question, which is the last time John Gizzi and I had the pleasure of being on this show together.
Yes.
Was not long after Pope Leo was coronated, and John Gizzi predicted there would be a day in the future when the Pope would come to his hometown of Chicago and hold a rally at the White Sox ballpark, which changes its name all the time. It used to be called Comiskey Park forever. And that he would deliver a sermon, and as you said, it would be labeled forever, Sermon from the Mound.
Yeah.
Or Sermon on the Mound. And it will. It'll happen. But
it will happen.
Now, we're taping this show to be released in a couple days. But 2 days ago, the Pope in Rome heavily, and he's the leader of the biggest religion in the world, criticized our president, vice president, secretary of defense, and their immigration policy in the most strongest terms ever. I mean, really strongly. And he is an American citizen in English, criticizing the leadership of his country on this policy. And there is a case of religion and politics fusing together and sort of in a big pushback against fundamentalist, you know, the evangelical Christian message that's coming out of these churches in the Bible Belt.
John Gizzi, can you talk about your trip to Israel?
Oh, yes, certainly. It was a very moving experience because I was at the fence in Gaza, along the Gaza Strip, where Hamas sent its invaders over. I was at the area where the young people who were having a dance and music festival were killed. I talked to one of the survivors who lay down for 7 hours pretending to be dead amid the corpses of her friends and prayed that the attackers would not see her and kill her. It was a powerful experience to see. And I was in the Golan Heights where Hezbollah from just over the mountain in Lebanon fired a missile that killed 12 children on a playground. And I met the parents and the brothers and sisters of these children. To be in Israel is akin to being in London during the Blitz in World War II. The country is geared for war, and they're fighting on 7 fronts right now. The speaker of the Knesset, I might add, is the first openly gay speaker of the Knesset. He pointed out, gays are in the military and it's never an issue. Women are in the military and in combat, sometimes tougher than the men. And the retarded go in the military and they find something for them to do. There is no political correctness in Israel. They don't say mentally challenged, they say retarded. The only people who are exempt are the ultra-Orthodox who study the Quran, and now they are working on a plan where they can go into the military, study the Quran there, serve as chaplains, but do other things. And that's something they're in the process of working out. It's going to take a little time. But this is a country that's at war constantly and will be for a while. The politics of it are very divisive, and they're going to have an election next September. I asked if they would postpone it the way Britain did in 1940 or the way Ukraine is doing now. They said, no, it's all scheduled to go ahead, and they'll hold an election when the government's mandate ends 10 months from now. It's fascinating to be there. I went to the site of Calvary and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I saw where Jesus was crucified on Calvary, where his tomb was, and where he rose. You can walk to all those things very easily. It's a powerful experience, and I just urge anyone to go on multiple levels, spiritual, political, and personal. They'll be touched.
I do want to bring our participants in on this call. So what I'm going to do is just reiterate that this is In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco with Peter Altschul. Our guests are former New York Congressman John LaBoutelier and John Gizzi from Newsmax. Trish, do we have any hands raised at the moment?
Yes, sir. We actually have about three or four. The first one is Mitch.
Mitch from Southern California. You are next.
You are first.
Yeah, you're first.
Mitch, we can't hear you.
If he's muted.
That's unusual.
He's still muted. Hold on. Mitch, you're still muted.
We'll give him a few more seconds. We may have to move along.
Okay, let's go on to Rodney, and we'll go back to Mitch in a little bit. Rodney?
Hi, Rodney.
Hello. I am in a really unique I'm in a really unique position. I am blind. I'm in my 60s. I've been blind all my life. And I'm probably part of one of those Christian church, those kind of, you know, Bible Belt churches you guys were referring to earlier. And the way some of those people love Charlie Kirk is unbelievable. But I would like to just point out something. A lot of times in earlier, and I used to live in the Northern Virginia area, which is, you know, right outside DC, and I had a lot of friends who were from other countries, mostly Spanish speaking. And what they mean by giving these people health care is that the hospitals will give them health care. And they know they can't pay for it, so they end up giving it to them. And I'm not talking about emergency care. I'm talking about, like, things like someone had a baby. Well, they didn't necessarily have to have the baby in the hospital, but they did. And so the hospital knew they couldn't collect, so they went ahead and paid for it. You know, they didn't even charge them. And that's the kind of thing that makes people really angry. I don't really feel that way. I'm a little more compassionate. But I do understand why people get upset, because I translated for someone, you know, in a situation where I told him, hey, you don't have to worry about any of that. And that's all I wanted to tell you. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the things. And, someday I hope that our country will go back to where we can listen to each other again.
Thank you, Roddy. Reaction from either John?
Yeah, we haven't mentioned it, but what has poisoned the well of public debate in this country is not the Republicans or the Democrats by themselves. It's the social media and and TV on both sides. And TV, I mean, on the right, Fox News spreads one story, and on the left, they spread a different story. And it can be venomous. And you add in what Facebook and others have been spreading, which is totally false about a lot of issues, and it really hypers up the arguments and angers people, and based on false information, you know.
I agree totally.
Yeah. And I have to say, you know, as someone who participates on X, I get false information all the time that comes to me, and people forward things to me. And, you know, my answer is usually prove it. Recently, I've had to disappoint a lot of friends of mine. A decision was made at Newsmax to really cut back on op-eds by people. And whereas I used to send them in just to be printed, you know, of course, saying this is opinion, I now refer them to other publications because we don't want to print opinions like that. And I tell interns, journalism student interns, that don't be a polemicist. So many of them want to have their opinion. I said, your opinion means nothing, nor does mine. If you report something and have facts, that's what you should be doing with the public venue of the press, the Fourth Estate. And sadly, everybody has wanted to be a columnist or a pundit. Fewer want to be real reporters.
Right.
Well, what is a polemicist?
That's opinions. Giving your opinions and preaching what you think is right. That I don't think that's what's poisoning the well, John. I think what's poisoning it, for years I've had people say to me, oh, why is the U.S. government giving $500 billion to China? And I go, they're not. We're not giving anything to China.
Right.
But they spread this stuff. I don't know who it is.
They're talking about trade, obviously.
Probably, yeah. So it's probably the trade deficit. I don't know. But they make it sound like Congress people are sitting there voting to give $500 billion a year of our tax dollars to Red China, which is not happening. And yeah, so, but how many, I've had people come up to me, they read this on Facebook or hear it, whatever, and they believe it's true. You know, and that didn't used to happen pre-social media. That was not happening. That stuff was not on the regular news of CBS radio news every day. They weren't saying stuff like that. But that,
social media's done a number on everything like that, believe me.
Everything, yeah.
And we have about six hands, guys, just to let you know.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Rodney. Mitch, are you unmuted?
Yes, he is.
I hope so. Yeah, you are.
Go right ahead, Mitch.
First of all, Congressman, I'm the oldest here. I think I'm 75.
No, Mitch. Okay.
But I have to correct John Gizzi. I'm really sorry because you're a journalist and I think you should know better. I'm Jewish and the Quran is the holy book read by Muslims. The Old Testament is the book read by people who are Jewish.
I meant to say you are correct, and I will say I'm wrong, and the Talmud is, that's what I meant to say, but I made a mistake.
You are forgiven, sir.
Thank you. As John Kennedy once said, an error only becomes a mistake when one refuses to correct it.
That's right. A quick comment, Congressman. I think you need to separate who blames whom for the shutdown from a more basic point. I believe that most Americans have very little, if anything, to do with government and would prefer not to. And when they do deal with government, given the number of agencies and services that are considered vital, other than perhaps things slowing down by a day or three, they don't see the government shutdown as directly affecting them. Now, I see that as separate and apart from who should be blamed for the shutdown. I, as a proud political independent who shuns both parties, I believe that, and I think that regardless of the surveys that you're talking about, I don't think most of us use or pay much attention to what the government's doing. I want to bring a totally different topic on quickly. On Truth Social this morning, the president indicated that by 6 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, if Hamas does not agree to the 20-point peace plan agreed to by most of the Arab nations and the United States, basically he's going to allow Israel to do whatever it needs to do to wipe out Hamas I'd like your input on the president's comments this morning.
All right, let me go first. Because about an hour before we started recording this, Hamas answered that and said they're going to release all the hostages, dead and alive, and agree to some of the Trump 20-point plan, but not all of it, and their technical discussions they still want to have. So we don't know as of this moment how that's going to be greeted by Trump and Israel, and whether that whatever these technical things are can be negotiated so that this agreement happens or not. We don't know. This is happening right while we're recording this show.
Breaking news, we call it.
Yeah.
And I would say, first of all, the major objection to Prime Minister Netanyahu came from the families of hostages that he was not doing enough to get them released. And now, if this report is accurate, they will be. And then it will be the negotiating on the remaining points. I would suspect that the objections probably have to do with them leaving
Gaza
to go elsewhere while it's being rebuilt by outside contractors. And they may say, why do they have to leave? But when I was talking to people who lived alongside where Gaza is and are separated by a fence, people in the kibbutz told me they have no objections to the Palestinians themselves. It's just to Hamas. If Fatah, the other faction in the body politic of the Palestinians, were in charge of both the West Bank and Gaza, then there probably would be less objection and less incendiary action, frankly. We'll see.
But the Israeli government does not want Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, running Gaza. They don't want it. And they don't trust Abu Abbas running the thing. So there's got to be new leadership in the Palestinian Authority. And by the way, in order to stay in power, Netanyahu has sold his soul to the far right parties there, who continue more settlements on the West Bank. In violation of U.S. policy, by the way. And even Trump is ticked off about it and wants them stopped. So relations between the two are not as great in private and in reality as people think.
Thank you, Mitch.
You're welcome.
Trish, who's next?
All right. I think this is Michael, area code 281-665. Michael, I think, is that you?
Michael Garrett.
All right. Go ahead, Michael.
It is. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Good. Welcome, gentlemen. You guys raised so many great points, but Congressman, you know, I usually look at things from an economic standpoint. I could address the religious area, but I'll save that for another time. But I'm looking at this shutdown, and I'm looking at the people who are being laid off, and there are threats that even a lot of government workers will be fired. And I believe that these things have wider, broader impact on the whole economy. The economy is, in my opinion, is not increasing. Jobs are not as job additions are not as fruitful as they have been. I think there's a whole downward impact on the citizens of this country based on what's going on from the government, from the president and Congress. Do you think this shutdown exacerbates this whole downward trend?
Yes, I think the following things are depressing the job market, which all year long has been negative growth. including 2 days ago, there was a ADT, the private payroll company. Their report showed that in the last month, nationally, we've actually lost 32,000 more jobs. And as you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics every month is supposed to report that. Today, we're taping this on a Friday, first Friday of the month. Normally, they would release the September numbers, but because of the government shutdown, Trump announced the other day, no report. And he doesn't want that report. He doesn't like these reports because they've been bad, that the country's not creating jobs. And it's in part a slowing of some parts of the economy. It's partly AI impacting hiring, especially in entry-level white-collar jobs. It's partly tariffs and the coming cost of tariffs, and it's partly government shutdowns. There's more people laid off flooding the job market. So add it all up, the jobs picture is a bad one at the moment.
John Gizzi?
I would also point out that this is almost incongruous. If one looks at the market, incredibly, with what is happening in a shutdown, and I remember shutdowns going back to when John was in Congress and the 1995 shutdown, this is the first time ever, or at least in my memory, the stock market is going up. And people who are in the market, be it your 401k or a diversified portfolio, are doing very well. At least they were in the last 3 days.
Yep. This can't be healthy for us. You know, we're a large swath of the population is suffering, and a large swath of the population is doing pretty well for themselves. This can't be good for this country overall.
By the way,
Michael.
It can't be. The other thing I got to throw in is a factor along with AI, blah, blah, is Trump's immigration crackdown. If he could just throw out people who are here illegally, who are criminals, no one would object to that. But when they go after agricultural workers, even chasing them in the fields in California, when they're picking lettuce and grabbing them and arresting them, what does that do to the job market in agriculture? Well, the stuff doesn't get picked and it rots and the cost of what's on the market goes up. Or B, they have to hire people who will pick it at a greatly increased cost. Thus, the cost of goods and groceries goes up. That's the Achilles heel of the government at the moment, of the Trump administration, is inflation is not going down like he promised. It's going up. And it's hurting the people Peter talked about, people who were hurting there. And a lot of them voted for Trump because Trump told them, I'll fix this thing. Now, they're also going to give them time to fix it, but time's running out. You know, we're coming up on a year. And if things keep getting more expensive here in New York, gas today, I filled up my car, $3.29 a gallon. That's higher than it was a year ago, you know.
We have time for at least one more.
Bob, you're saying the same thing. Who's next?
Who do we have?
Robert Acosta.
Another California.
I'll be brief.
Hello, Robert.
Absolutely. Hi, Bob. I'll be very brief. First of all, this man cares. This man cares what the government does when hospitals are closed, when our own special programs for the blind face, you know, destruction, when 80,000 people are fired, etc. So I respectfully disagree with Mitch. I agree with him on a lot of things, but to say it's, at least that's what I heard, that we don't care about what's happening with government and the closing up.
I think what he said was most people don't care. Or don't pay attention.
I write my congressman. Right. I do the best I can. My question is, we heard the president talk about the military for hours and hours. Are you content that he wants to have training sessions in big cities, with the military so they'll learn to fight wars in our big cities? Thank you.
No. I thought that talk was an embarrassment to
it
be
was.
True.
Thank you.
By both him and Hegseth. And when Hegseth's talking about fat soldiers and fat generals, has he looked at the commander in chief lately? I mean, are we going to try to set an example of physical fitness? Then let's start at the top.
John Gizzy?
Yeah, I have to say that, whatever the criticisms of the speech by the president and the secretary of war, it's still undeniable. Recruitment and volunteers in the military are at an 18-year high.
Yes.
On October 13th, my birthday, the Navy will celebrate its 250th birthday. It's older than the United States itself. And there are 330,000 active duty seamen and commissioned and non-commissioned officers, as well as 110,000 ready reservers. So the military is in strong shape. Now, we can argue about the training and the admonitions to the men and women in uniform, but the fact is that the military, for a number of reasons, is now on the upswing in the public's eyes and growing.
You know why, John? It's a paycheck, and it's a safe paycheck. It's okay to be in the military. When we were young, coming out of Vietnam, no one wanted to join. It was such a disaster. But now it is a badge of honor, and thank God it is. That had nothing to do with Trump and Hegseth's display the other day.
No.
When, you know, Trump is giving a campaign speech talking about all sorts of stuff, every grievance he's got. What does that have to do with the brass of the military, which is apolitical?
Gentlemen, we are running out of time, unfortunately. What I'm going to suggest is anybody else with their hands raised, if you want to send me a question, I'll be happy to forward it to both Congressman Leboutelier and Mr. Gizzy. I'm at bobbranco93@gmail.com. I gave that out before, so you should have that. Just send me your questions. I'll forward your questions, and I'll forward you back their responses. I'll do that for you. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure having both of you on our program. It was another very, very informative discussion. We appreciate both of you very, very much. We welcome you back quite often.
We absolutely do.
Call us anytime.
Yeah, it was great.
Thank
being
you very
Bob
much.
And Peter and John, great always to be with you.
Right.
Thank you. And Peter, thanks. And thanks to everybody else that was involved with this program today. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, everybody. And we'll talk next week. Have a great week.